Welcome to the Dirty Sheets, everybody. Our WrestleMania special. Billy is in Philly right now, getting ready for night one of WrestleMania. So we are sneaking in a show, especially for everybody here on the Dirty Sheets, nice and free for everyone. We have a video up right now on YouTube where we go over our predictions for Mania Nights 1 and 2. That is on the Dirty Sheets YouTube. Just type in the Dirty Sheets and you will be able to find it. And it is the latest video up now. Also on the Sports Gambling Podcast, we have Billy going over the odds for WrestleMania and all the matches so you can make some money. That is up now as well. So jump on that before Mania starts. You will hear this in plenty of time if you have your alert set. Make sure you always have your alert set for the Dirty Sheets. I'm Kev Manning. I'm along with my brother-in-law. That is Billy Body.
Yo, so I'm going to try and do a last-minute update for the paywall people because obviously this is a week where you want as much information as WrestleMania about WrestleMania as possible, but it's actually a week where a lot of stuff is pretty much tied down. Mm-hmm. So unless me or someone around this WWE hotel see somebody here that shouldn't be, there really isn't too much that happens other than certain journalists getting headbutted on the steps. But yeah, there isn't
Glasgow.
Anything. What's that?
Glasgow.
Right. Yeah. Glasgow kiss. There isn't really anything going on, but I will be doing a last minute report if I can. Some of the problems we've had with the shows have been because of snow and shit in Cavs area. So the
Sports Gambling Podcast show,
it was the show that was supposed to be done together. I've done it solo, but we have got together for this one. And I did say to you guys, we want to do something different. All the cliche lists of best moments and matches have been done, but the build-ups haven't. And it's appropriate because this build-up has accidentally been top-notch. And I'm sure Rock and Roman would have been, but not if people didn't want it and not if it was rushed. So if we're getting that next year and we're getting the one we have this year with a bonus Rock heel run, I'm all for it. So, yeah, we're going to cover our top 10 builds. And I actually really feel the one that we've had this year could be included, but I've excluded it for my list. Just not sure where to slot it in as yet. I think I need to factor in the conclusion of whatever happens tonight into that, because it could be a build that goes on beyond this year. Because I factor in the build to 39 in with this one, and perhaps the overall build we were looking at is Rock Roman, and we might just be talking about a very subpar Cody Rhodes title reign. It didn't work and it doesn't have any relevance, but Rock and Roman is a huge match and it all builds towards that. So I don't know where the cutoff point is mm-hmm. for this build and what we're building towards. So I will talk about in my list the ones that I know have been concluded.
Yeah, I agree. I don't have anything from this year, even though this Rock Cody thing is fucking fantastic. And it's I think it's a lot of what we have said in the past about being starving. And when someone gives you anything, you're like so fucking happy for it. Although this is a very good fucking storyline, but we don't know where things end up and things like that. So let's go. We're going to go. What's the order you wanted to do first, Billy? You wanted to go from 10 to 6 right off the bat with both of us doing that?
I'll go 10 to 6 because if we go 10, 10, 9, 9, 8, 8, 8, sure. It's going to be too congested. So yeah, give me a clean run and then you have a clean run and then we'll finish up.
All right.
For 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, we can go toe to toe, but let's get 10 and 6 done. All right. So at number 10, I've gone for Hogan and Sid. And the irony of that is that WrestleMania 8 should have had two forever in the top 10 because Hogan and Flair was building perfectly, mm-hmm. and Macho Man and Jake was building perfectly for WrestleMania blowoffs. And in the end, they mashed up the entire card. Jake's wrestling Undertaker. Savage is wrestling Flair because they faked some photos. And Hogan's fighting Sid. The one that gets in that I believe the build still had a lot of weight was Hogan and Sid. You had the Royal Rumble elimination. Then you had Sid go on the best tear, the best booking of a heel that I think that we've seen. The strongest booking for someone that had just turned. And by the time you got to the match, and especially with Hogan saying that he was going to take a timeout, I think a lot of people felt like Sid should have and could have actually gone over and actually ended Hulkamania somewhere in the middle of the show and allowed the final thing to be Savage winning. But that's not what happened. We didn't have, back in that day, we didn't have Hogan getting pinned and then crying and laying down the boots and waving, and he came back a year later. So that didn't happen. And Sid wasn't happy with his booking either after not beating Hogan and then doing jobs to Warrior on house shows. But Sid was massively over as a babyface. If you watch the squash matches in 1991, he got a massive reaction after he debuted after SummerSlam. He then turned heel after the Royal Rumble thing, where he fairly put out Hulk Hogan and Hulk Hogan pulled him out for no reason. But Sid's the heel. But even with that poor part of the booking, Sid went on a tear, managed by Whippleman, who was new at the time, by the way. That's the second gig he had, where he was managing Big Bully Busick before that, who ended up being a jobber. But yeah, he was paired with Whippleman, went on a tear, put everybody on stretchers, and was a legit force by that point, where you accepted everything you'd lost with WrestleMania 8. With Jake Savage, Sid Undertaker, and Hogan Flair been a better WrestleMania? Yeah, 100%. We'd probably be talking about two matches that are forever in the top 10 for builds, but instead we just get one, or at least on my list. Number 9 and 8, I'm going to talk about together. So I've got Rock Austin 3, and I've got Rock Austin 2 in there. So I actually don't have, I'll tell you now, I don't have Rock Hogan in my top 10, just because the beginning promo where they confronted each other was top notch, mm-hmm. and is an individual top 10 all-time Raw moment. But I did not think that the murdering the Rock in the bus, which would have killed anybody that wasn't a superhero, was good. I also did not like Hogan pinning the Rock on the SmackDown before in a two versus three match to basically tell you Hogan gets his pin because he's complained that he's losing on Sunday, basically. By 2002, I was aware of wrestling politics and wrestling booking to the point where I knew The Rock was winning at WrestleMania 18. So it took something away from it slightly, but the first part of that build was great. The two matches that I've got in is Rock Austin 3 and Rock Austin 2. So they had three matches. The one I've excluded is Rock Austin 1 at WrestleMania 15. I think at that point it was more about Vince, and anybody that you aligned with Vince was kind of portrayed as a Vince lackey. And I feel like whilst The Rock went on to warrant being the champion, at that point I don't think that he was quite credible enough in the build or just in general to be main eventing with Steve Austin. I don't believe there was really anybody else to do it. But the fact they were considering doing a three-way with Mick Foley because they didn't know if The Rock and Austin would be big enough kind of tells you where that was at that point. Still a great build. Would be in the top 20 if we can get there, because it does involve the beer truck and whatnot. But that's also something that I find to be a very overrated moment with the beer truck. They really got going en route to WrestleMania 17. That's where you get the My Way video. A lot of people would have this higher, but I, as I mentioned previously, I don't think the Deborah inclusion made any sense. Never before has a chairman or an authority figure given someone a manager. It was just done for that storyline. The face-to-face with Jim Ross, hitting each other's moves on each other, everything that's built into the My Way video, that's great. So I have that one as the best Rock and Austin build, just ahead of Rock Austin 3. That was Heel Rock, Hollywood Rock. This was Rock doing the concert and whatnot, leading to Austin's retirement at that point. So you can swap these around either way. I've gone back and forth with what's 8 and what's 9, but I've got Rock Austin 2 at 8 and Rock Austin 3 at 9. Number 7, I've got Kurt Angle and Shawn Michaels. this is here just simply because they built up a rarity in this industry, which is a genuine dream match, which is a genuine 50-50. And they didn't just build it up on like a heel angle, attacking Shawn Michaels, and you go into the match and Michaels has got a bad leg and he's selling it. No, they brought in Sensational Sherry. She got ankle locked. You had Kurt Angle singing. You had Marty Jannetty involved. You had a match with Angle and Jannetty. The build was just absolutely perfect. And I can't think of anything I was dying more to see. Now, it's not higher because I am professional enough at this job to tell you that that was my first Mania. And now I'm very numb to Mania. I'm literally going in 4 hours and I couldn't care less. We're not in California. That's this stupid Mania starts at 5 o'clock in California. This is a bad time. Or it starts at 7.
It's starting at it's starting at 4 for me.
Right, yeah. Well, I'm in Philly. But yeah, I remember when the last Mania started at 5. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Sorry, this one starts at 7. So in 6 hours, it's a great build, but I'm not looking forward to it anywhere near as much as I did for my first couple. But that's all that's natural. It's like waiting to lose your virginity. It's never going to be as good or never going to be as much anticipation. But yeah, I was dying to see that match. But just because it was my first Mania, I cannot make it top five. It would be inaccurate, but still a very, very good build. And in sixth place, I've gone for Hogan Warrior. Hogan needed something to do that year. They were going back and forth with shit when they realized that Zeus couldn't be in a WrestleMania match. So they considered signing Tugboat and turning him heel. They considered turning Dusty heel. They considered going with Kurt Hennig, and Hogan said, no way, he's too small. So in the end, they went with the Warrior. And Hogan's actual complaining and politicking actually went against him, because when Vince decided that he was going to go with the Warrior, he subsequently decided that he was going to win. And so it wasn't a case of just putting someone in there to be Hogan's whipping boy again. It was someone who was actually going to beat Hogan. It was an entire change of direction. Did it work? No, because the numbers tell you it didn't work. But the build-up was really, really good. Complete nonsensical promos, but that's what the 90s and the late 80s was all about. When you think about these guys, you think about steroids and cocaine and ridiculous nonsensical promos, and they went back and forth and they really up that shit on each other with just the crazy planets and the worlds and the gods and the powers and all that shit. But it all started as well with the Royal Rumble moment, and obviously a little bit of friction on Saturday night's main event as well, which is what that show was used for. Very underrated. The new fans who I don't like and don't have time for would never understand what Saturday night's main event did for WrestleManias, but that's their problem. I lived it, I know, and this is a part of the reason why this gets into number six.
All right, there's a few things like on your list that I don't even have, because like with the Rock Austin stuff, I can't. You remember way fucking more than I do, and we've always said that, like, by far. And so things really got to stick out in my head to like even trip my trigger. And all the Rock Austin stuff, that all blends in together for me. I couldn't tell you, other than like I know with,
Austin. There's three markers. There's three markers. Number one, first one, Rock's a heel. He's with the corporation. He gets hit with a beer truck. The second one, they're both baby faces, and it's the My Way video. And the third one, the Rock is the heel, and it's Hollywood Rock the whole way. And Austin's the good guy.
See,
that's it. That's there are three fundamental differences.
See, I wouldn't be able to tell you where the My Way video was in this. I thought the My Way video was for the last one, where Austin is telling him, I need to beat you. I need to beat you. And that's why he flips on him with McMahon.
They're all different. It's Rock Hill versus Babyface Austin. Then it's Face-Face. Then it's Rock Hill Austin Face. So they're all completely different.
All right, so and then the Warrior Hogan thing, it didn't do much because they were both good guys, and it was like a lot of like it started at the Rumble with the clothesline thing, and then like they'd help each other and then bump into each other. It wasn't crazy for me, so I left that off. But I'm going with number 10 for me was Flair and Shawn Michaels. because it was an end of a guy who's been around forever. That goes into a lot for me. And then it was also the, he's never going to retire, but Vince says, yeah, no, you're going to. And, but that's fine. You could stay as long as you keep winning every fucking time. And then Michael's giving him shit to where it was, you know, you don't have a chance against me, really. And like insulting Flair, which sets him off and he's pissed off and he's talking about, you know, laying down old Yeller. So that's at a number 10 for me. Number 9. It could have moved around. There was a lot of jumble here other than like a top 3 almost for me. Even after 2 was it was hard to really put things in order of certain things. I have HBK and Undertaker 2 for the retirement. This could have moved around really easily when you get into the weeds of it, where we have from the year before, that's what helps this match, is the year before is possibly one of the greatest matches, not possibly, it is one of the greatest matches that's ever fucking happened. So then you have anticipation of, I wonder if this could be, you know, done, could they do it again? And then it's Shawn being obsessed with he needs to get to the Taker. And Taker just laughs and tells him, fuck you, no. And so now it's Michaels has to win the Rumble to get a title shot against Taker. He can't do it, so he freaks the fuck out, causing Taker to lose at Elimination Chamber, so he doesn't have the title. So then he keeps, you know, he pushes it to where he can't not give him a shot just at another match to beat him. But Taker says, all right, that's fine, but your career's on the line. So where this ends up is that HBK is fucking done. And, I mean, the only reason for me that this is further up that list, as in like the higher number for not the greatest, is you knew where it was going. There was no, I did not have a question mark about, you know, we knew HBK was retiring. So that's the kind of thing which pushes things out. The same with the Flair one. You knew he was retiring, so you knew how the match was going to fucking go. Number 8 is the Yes Movement for Mania 30. And that is because it wasn't even supposed to happen. it was going to be horribly Batista and it's Batista Orton, right? Or no, it was Batista Orton.
Yeah, Batista came into win the Rumble and beat him.
Yeah, and it was like everyone was like, "Are you out of your fucking minds?" So all hell breaks loose from.
You know what Brian was doing?
What Brian, he was going to do? No.
Yeah, he was like in. He was fighting to get out of the Wyatt family.
And so like now it's all about Brian, and so there's like 2 matches that even do this because he has to then beat Triple H to even get to that next level, and they kill him afterwards with fucking they handcuff him and fucking smash him into the fucking tables and all kind of craziness. So, I thought that was a really good build-up, and it was all because of the fans. So, going next, I put in one that you did not, and that was Rock and Hogan. I think a lot of it has to do with, and we're not really looking at it this way, but it's hard to not let it creep into your mind about how the match ended up afterwards. Because it was one of the most iconic things. You see them, you know, in the ring together. It was fucking, the crowd was insane. Everything was fucking wild going up to it. Hogan turns fucking good afterwards and because of how popular he is. But I get what you're saying about, you know, the semi-truck smashing into the ambulance. But the ambulance, to me, it wasn't like the ambulance was ripped in half. So I'm like, yeah, I mean, he'd be fucked up. And obviously, you know, we think in real life, yeah, he'd probably have some fucking head damage from rolling around a little bit in there. But that, for me, goes with number 7. So number 6, like I said, things could have rolled around on my list quite a bit. And basically, almost for one thing, and this is Punk Taker at 29. What kills me here and why it is not higher is because
this is so close to being on mine.
It should be for the title. It should be streak versus title. They fucked this up. And this is why it is not like way fucking higher. They fucked this up. And the fucking crowning jewel is that Paul Bearer dies and they fucking come out
dressed with fucking Paul Bear is fucking Heyman. And then fucking he has the urn talking, Punk does, and pours fucking ashes on fucking Taker.
I'm gonna miss.
Oh,
I'm gonna miss Vince. I'm gonna miss Vince letting this actually get on TV because this is not happening.
No, I think they could do it more now. I don't think Vince would dare do it now. They had to apologize. Remember asking, that?
I don't think Triple H is asking anybody if they can use the death of their family member.
I think it's coming with Bray. I think it's clearly coming with Bray. I don't think they'll be disrespectful to Bray, but I think he will have a role in this next thing for sure. He might be the Undertaker urn at this fucking point with Captain Howdy or whatever. So there's Taker and Punk just pouring the fucking ashes on him is such a major thing. It almost is like nothing else needs to even fucking happen for this. Like I said, if it was title versus streak, it would have been much better. Taker would have won the fucking title here. I would assume if it was a streak versus that, and maybe that's why they didn't want to fucking do it, but it would have made more sense. You had streak versus streak at this point because Punk was fucking had that belt for so fucking long. And of course they just had to give it to Rock, which looked like they would have fucking done again here if the crowd didn't fucking lose their minds. Maybe not gotten the title, but you know, he was in that fucking title picture here. So that's my, six.
All right, so now we'll go 5 versus 5 and 4 versus 4, 3 versus 3, etc. Okay. So number 5, I've got Austin Brett. It wasn't supposed to happen because they had their match at Survivor Series. Obviously, we know it was supposed to be Brett versus Shawn. But you bring all of that into this chaotic mess, and it ends up being very, very watchable. First of all, you have a hot potato title. Goes from Shawn to Sid. Shawn then wins it in the stadium. And instead of losing it to Brett, he loses his smile. From that point, Brett wins the final four and loses it the next day, the vacant title will be to Sid because of Austin. So you've gone from Sid to Shawn, back to Shawn. Shawn doesn't want to lose it. Brett wins final four, and now you're back around to Sid, and then who loses it to The Undertaker. And because of the stuff that Austin's doing, this leads to Austin Brett again. Brett even gets a rematch where the main event can change like 6 days before Mania. And this is where he cuts his promo in the cage saying this is bullshit. So much goddamn injustice. Tries to kill Vince. Yeah, this is the start of the Attitude Era. This match, this build before it. Officially, Vince says his good guys versus bad guy promo after he says the Brett Screw Brett thing. So it's officially declared, you know, as the Attitude Era after this. But there's no way this is not an Attitude Era build. And you get a really good match out of it. But the build, as Brett's turning heel, and obviously afterwards we get the Canadian Heart Foundation. Mm. But the build is very, very watchable. Just forget about what you were supposed to see, and you will just be entertained by the television in these 6 weeks.
So for me, it didn't make the list because I didn't feel almost there was a fucking build until that last the last Raw was so fucking good going into that Mania, where I mean, I, you know me with the memory on this stuff, I recall that fucking shit like yesterday, where Austin is helping Brett because he wants him to be the fucking champion going into Mania so he gets a title shot. And you have Sid or Taker trying to help fucking Sid, which is their opponents in Mania. That's what was the greatest about this. And when Brett fucking loses and swears, and Sid coming to the ring where Brett is yelling, "You know it. Everyone in the back knows it," and they catch Sid on fucking audio when he's walking in going, "I don't know shit, crybaby." That is the fucking greatest. "I don't know shit, crybaby."
Sid no-showed WrestleCon, and there's no fucking
today?
Easy way to get a reason. Yeah, just didn't turn up.
Oh, fuck. It's not even softball season.
Yeah, he said that something to do with a flight, missed a flight or something.
That's shitty. So yeah, that wasn't on my list because it was only that Raw that really did something for me. Even though the match was fantastic and it had a lot to do with history, you know, changing a lot of things in history with Bret and Austin, which is great. Because I'm like, well, they just had their match in Survivor Series. I don't remember Austin really like hounding him after that and chasing him down and doing stuff to him. It just doesn't, nothing sticks out in my head. So my number five is Macho and Flair. A lot of it has to do with Macho Man because of the intensity that he is. And it's hard that I even have this at five because the letdown part for me after like, oh, they're going to show something at Mania. They're going to show fucking a picture at Mania. We all wait and it just never fucking happened. It's like they just decided, yeah, well, we don't have anything. We never came up with a good idea. And so we never did anything. And it was like, there was a centerfold. It was supposed to be like a naked Elizabeth or some weird fucking shit. And they're like, oh, look where the staple is in the fucking page. It was that. And nothing fucking happened from it. But it was, all the other pictures were fantastic. I have the magazine with, you know, oh, look at the pillows. They say R&L for Rick and Liz. And she's feeding me strawberries. And then showing the real fucking pictures. And I was always, my mind was always fucking boggled. Like, how did they fucking do this? Because this was a long time ago. You know, it's not nowadays. And I'm like, did she just really fucking stay still and they fucking ran in the other guy real quick and took a picture? You know, it was all that kind of shit in my head. So it was a big, you know, blood feud. And, you know, like wanted to kill each other. And like you said, it should have been fucking Hogan Flair. Of course they fucked this whole thing up. And it's always been, it seems like we have always more had Macho Flair than we have had Hogan Flair because it's the guys who could actually wrestle and do a fucking match. So that's my number five is Macho Flair 8 at Mania 8.
Okay.
You're on with number four.
All right. Well, you just said eight. Oh, yeah, but I'm sorry. Mania you meant eight. Five, right?
Yeah.
Mania eight is number five. All right. So I'm on number four, and I've gone for Rock Cena number one. I felt this was very good and built up towards this match perfectly. Obviously, he had the build from the year out, but Rock wasn't there. And then when he did get there, Cena
right.
absolutely lit him up.
Yes.
What's that, sorry?
You're right. Yeah, 100%.
Cena absolutely lit him up. He came to play. This was not a fucking version of Cena that we had seen at the time. Cena was obviously heading to more towards the PG stuff, and it split the audience. But we saw why Cena was picked in the first place. We saw the 2004 version, like he around the cock back, and he didn't have to like wear a chain or anything like that. Although we did see that for a week. But it was actually what he said, what he was able to say, picking up the promo written on his hand, which created real heat and real dislike between those two, which we've now found out about since. So I just thought it was top notch every single week. The Rock definitely played his part, but I just feel that, you know, going into it was a case of, oh, we missed the Rock, we missed Steve Austin. Like, these guys aren't as good. And Cena stood up to The Rock, whether it was because The Rock had been out for a while. The Rock was still good, don't get me wrong. But, you know, I don't think insulting his merchandise and I'm all for like a bit of homophobia. I'm not fucking Sean Ross Sapp, or at least I don't pretend to be insulted by stuff. But I thought The Rock went for the lower hanging fruit and it was more basic. And Cena just ripped him to shreds in a very different way. But ultimately it led to us desperately wanting to see the match, not 2 years in a row, but definitely the first time around.
All right. I agree with you. That was a very good one. The writing on the forearm was fucking brutal. Oh my fucking God. I can't imagine backstage what happens after that. I have from WrestleMania 7 at my number four spot, Jake the Snake and Rick Martel in a blindfold. Jake is so fucking good that it's frightening with everything he fucking does anyway. So him getting fucking squirted in the face by fucking Rick Martel. And you think, okay, yeah, his eyes hurt. And, you know, they see with the, he's rapping. Each week is another, like, little video promo where they're rapping his eyes. All right, Jake, we're going to see how this goes. And they're putting bandages on him. And he's blind for a couple weeks. And then he goes back on the Brother Love Show again. And when he's back on the Brother Love Show, they're fucking with him. And he's got the glasses on. And, you know, he's fucking blind. And then gets fucking el-kabonged by Rick Martel again, which glasses get knocked off. But we don't know anything yet. And then he DDTs Brother Love. And then the camera goes in where he's fucking screaming and yelling with his eyes open and one eye is fucking white. My fucking God. The fucking, this is better than Rey Mysterio's eyeball falling out by far. they do this one better. It was something I'd never seen before in my life where it was like, wow, how'd they do this? I was pretty young at this fucking point too. So you're like, holy shit, look at this. And then going in and saying, we're going to have a blindfold match, which was a genius fucking match, because then it's, if you're a good guy, the crowd is helping you the whole time, cheering wherever you're fucking pointing and fucking over the bad guy. And it's good to have a bag over your head that you could see through so you could fucking actually work. But I thought this was fucking a brilliant piece going into it. So that is WrestleMania 7, Jake and Martel at number 4.
All right, cool. Definitely nowhere near my list, yeah. That one. But that's individual lists. And I guess for the next two, I don't think I really went down the individual route as much as I should have done, because I think this is where I sort of came to what people expect to be here. For me, these could be a little bit lower. I would probably say I enjoyed stuff like Roxina, Bret Austin, and certainly the Rock Austin builds a little more than these, but I think these have to be there. Number 3 is Hogan versus Andre. You have to sell out a massive fucking stadium. You don't have anybody else to face Hulk Hogan. You've done good business with Mr. Wonderful turning heel. So you only have one thing left to do. And you send Hogan out there with Heenan. You say he's unbeaten for 15 years. You pull off a cross and you sell out the fucking building. Like, I don't even know what else they really did. I know he attacked him on Saturday night's main event. But it again goes down to the less is more. Like, you do a massive segment on Piper's Pit. You attack him on Saturday night's main event. You do some promos behind a green screen. And you sell 93,000 tickets. It's like the beauty of the simplicity and also the beauty of executing and doing the best you can with the segments that you are going to do. It's not fucking 6 weeks of television where the guy comes out and says nothing, which is a lot of what we see now because they have so much time to fill. You only saw these guys 2-3 times and they got you ready and they got 93,000 people there. It has to be there. The cross being pulled off has to be there. With the bonus of, this probably puts it 2 places higher than it should be, with the nail, his fingernail catching the chest and there's blood on the cross. Yeah, just a stroke of luck, really, for them. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's my number 3.
Number 3 for me is Kane and Undertaker, the first go-round. There was a lot of build when – and you knew where it was going. You knew, of course, they're going to fucking fight each other because Kane is harassing Taker constantly, constantly, constantly. And no, I won't fight you, and he keeps on fucking getting after him. And then it we get a little bit of a Mania deal where he fucking, or at a Royal Rumble, where we have the casket match that Undertaker wins, but then he gets, or no, he loses that match right against Shawn, but Shawn gets fucked up in the back because Taker always loses fucking casket matches, which is fucking odd. He gets stuffed in this giant fucking casket and you realize why it's a fucking huge casket. So he's in this casket, and then this is the Rumble I'm at too. I'm like right in front of where they do this, and you could feel the fucking heat shoot up. Kane uses a fucking axe, chops open this fucking casket. They pour in fucking gasoline, put it to the entrance of the Royal Rumble, and set the fucker on fire. And I mean, you get into the whole, you know, this is all the spooky bullshit, I guess, because it's, you know, fucking, how is it? You talk about Rock living from a fucking crash. Fucking guy get lit on fire, burned to a fucking crisp, but nothing was in it.
But they always said that they had powers. Like, they never said the Rock had any powers.
Yeah, it's true. These guys had magic powers. Kane was shooting fucking lightning out of his hands, lighting guys on fire, stage hands, if you remember that leading up as well. So that's where I put Kane Taker, part one, WrestleMania 14 at number three.
Okay, so at number two, and again, I don't know if this would be for me as high, but it's because of what it did. And I've gone for Steve Austin and Shawn Michaels. And I include Vince saying that he doesn't want Austin as champion at this point, which is the beginning of Vince and Steve. But Michaels was the champion coming off the Survivor Series 97. The heat had never been higher for anybody. If you actually look into a little bit of the more insider stuff, you'll see that whilst Michaels was champion at this point, two house shows were cancelled before the main event because Shawn was out there giving it to the crowd. They were throwing batteries at him. There was one match where they were actually in Nashville and they were supposed to, him and Triple H were supposed to face Jeff Jarrett and Jerry Lawler in the main event. It was a special special thing they had booked, and I believe some of the money was going to somebody for a charitable cause. But Shawn was like, fuck this, I'm not going out. They threw a battery at me, which he incited them to do because he was such a prick. So by the time you get to Steve Austin, everybody obviously is ready for Austin to win. Then you chuck in Mike Tyson. Tyson comes out, he's at the Royal Rumble, comes out the next day. You do the little scuffle with Austin. Then he joins DX. This disregards everything but the finish because Tyson just deciding he's going to be on Austin's side isn't a part of the build. The fact is you got to the build where Tyson was at press conferences. Tyson was on TV. Tyson was in DX. He had a public workout where they tied up Austin, kissed his head, and Austin's red hot on TV. Michaels is a hot heel. Everything's perfect here. And you can't have a better example of something that turned everything around. If this match, the build-up to this, single-handedly turned around a company that was fucking dead. If this match doesn't work, you give Tyson $4 million and you couldn't afford to pay Bret Hart $1.5 million and you even got him screwed at Survivor Series to the point where you tried to get out of that contract, but then you find $4 million on Mike Tyson, you clearly don't have that money. It's clearly borrowed. You're clearly risking the entire business on it. And not only did it work, they ended up getting past WCW 4 weeks after Austin was champion with the whole Austin versus Vince that ended up being Dude Love turning heel thing. But yeah, this all comes from this match. This is the number one business turning match in history. More so than Hogan turning at Bash at the Beach, because WCW was already moving in a positive direction. WWE was trending in a negative direction. They were never lower than when they had to get rid of Bret Hart because they couldn't afford him. The company was in an absolute shit state going into 1998. 5 months later, you do this match, you gamble on Tyson, and you start the Austin McMahon feud, and you're fucking thriving. It's unbelievable what this match did. It can't not be here.
That's a good rundown of that, because that was the one that... Kevin Sullivan said to Nash in the back the next day, did you watch it last night? And he said, yeah. And he goes, did you feel that? She's taking on water. He was saying that was like the Titanic hitting the iceberg. And now it's WCW falling apart from that one match. My number two is Hogan Macho from five. We have a year storyline buildup and you don't know it for a while. But when Macho Man shows all the footage going all the way back to him putting Elizabeth on his shoulder and pausing it with his hand on her ass, right there is where it starts and goes through all of the, I mean, Elizabeth takes a bump. Of all people, Elizabeth takes a fucking bump. And that is the best, I want to say that's almost the best fucking heel turn you've seen, where he kills him in the fucking on the Saturday Night Main Event afterwards with the belt, even though there's fun because it's a live show and they fuck up a few times with, you know, give me the countdown, what's the tizime, and all that, and then Brutus running in too early, all that kind of stuff. But it's Macho Man at his fucking best. Macho Man makes so much shit. He's the same to me like with Jake, where the intensity and being able to sell and do things, and he's fucking steaming and his eyes are falling out of his head while he's screaming in his fucking promos and his veins are about to fucking burst. So a full year going in, mega powers exploding. You knew where it was going to go, of course, with Hogan, because it was like, I can't believe Hogan was just being a good friend. I can't believe this. Meanwhile, you know, we've always seen heel Hogan inside Hogan. He just leaves fucking Macho Man to fucking fend for himself, even with Hakim falling out of the fucking ropes. So I will have Hogan Macho, WrestleMania 5, number 2.
For my number one, I have Hulk Hogan and Macho Man Randy Savage. What else to say? You just did the whole match. So,
well, you did my number one. You did my number one. So, this
all right.
Is what's going
to
happen.
It's an anticlimactic. Yeah, well, I mean, it's back to back, so it's worse. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, all I can add is that there's a promo from Randy Savage coked up to the eyeballs, and it's a summary of things. And this is where WWE really started to hammer home and successfully nail the editing side of things, the package side of things. I mean, this is a 1 year build, and all you need to watch is a fucking insane, coked up, pissed off Randy Savage running through it. And that's it. That's all you need. That's all you need. And you'll see why this is fun. It's the best recap promo I think that there's ever been. The build obviously is a year. It makes perfect sense. It's layered as well, from being, I would say, anywhere under 13, 14 years old, where Hogan's the clear babyface, and then you can. It's basically a situation where you can be a father and son and see it two different ways. Because now you're older, you'll be like, well, why was he fucking getting so close to his girl? Was he like doing the groundwork to fucking to get his turn? Like, was, because that's what it looks like now. Like, it looks like that he was it looks like Hogan was doing a little bit too much and was creeping on his best friend's girl, like, slowly and slyly. So it's different to what it looks like as a kid. But the fact is that real life is not black and white either. So yeah, maybe Hulk Hogan was doing that. Maybe he was a typical guy. Maybe it is difficult to not. Maybe it is realistically difficult to be around Elizabeth and not want to fuck her. And yeah, I mean that's guys. This was a real like guy situation with two guys, and one's got the girl and one has to be around the girl. And I mean, now he wants to get his turn to fuck the girl, and the one who's with her is going insane. But we also know that he's possessive, because we actually saw him being possessive all the way up to 1987, and then he turned him like babyface.
Yeah,
but he was only
ropes.
A good guy for the day. Yeah, so it made sense actually that he was more more jealous and more possessive than he was not. Because for you guys to, you know, to look at that and say, oh, but he like, you know, he loved her, and suddenly, why did he suddenly became obsessive because Hogan had to be the babyface. We needed a heel, we needed a babyface. No, you're wrong, because if you actually go back and watch the way Savage was prior to that, he was only nice to her for a very, very small period. And then they obviously started to build for this match. So made perfect sense. Did really good business, did a massive buy rate, much better than the other mania that was at Trump Plaza the year before. But Trump Plaza are the Macho Man manias where he wins and loses the belt. This is the best point of his career. And his thing is number one, because when we did our storylines part, we had feuds for Savage and Flair, Savage and Hogan, Savage and Jake, Savage and Steamboat, Savage and DDP, even like got a mention. So Macho Man has had very good heated feuds throughout his career. So he takes number one there.
Yeah,
I mean, that's really, really all I can add.
He always it's like he took pride more in like a storyline. Always, there was always something with him, and he could also do work too. So he was good on all fronts. Very low key, maybe like when you talk about greatest of all time, he's not like always up there, like really considered like first. You notice that? And he really could be.
Yeah, it could be definitely be. Definitely should be in top 10, definitely should be in Rushmore conversations, but yeah. I think those are a lot to do with business and whatnot as well. But he has decent numbers in that sense as well. But, I mean, there's a few, as I'm concluding, take a Punk, take a Kane, probably should have crept into mine. I don't know at the expense of what. And also Hogan Warrior, because obviously you had Hogan... sorry, not Hogan Warrior.
I was going to say
Savage Warrior.
He had
Savage costing him the belt against Sergeant Slaughter, and that was obviously the one where Sherry was asking for a title shot, and he said no. But it was all quite a short build. It was just a case of, right, we're getting the belt of Warrior, and we need something for else for him to do. What they did in that time was good, but it just didn't get into the top 10. But it's another feud where Savage is up there for top level feuds, and he even revisited the Warrior thing again at SummerSlam 92. So yeah, this is my number one. What's yours? I want to know what I took.
Hogan Andre, of course. Mania 3. And like you said, we gave from ripping a cross off, this whole thing is fucking made. I think it was more so the shock of Andre all of a sudden was a bad guy. Cause that was the weird thing to me too, that it was, I don't recall, like, if you look back now, I think it's when you barely have a fucking inkling when it is Hogan getting a fucking, what do you call a trophy. And so does Andre. And Andre's is a smaller trophy for being undefeated for 20 fucking years. And Hogan winning the title for 3 years is fucking more, you know. And he kind of gives a look and leaves and shit like that. So... there, that I think is the only looking part where you'd go, oh, is something going on? And as a kid, you would never have fucking noticed it. But selling out this fucking monstrous fucking place from this, and I don't know if people really thought that Andre was going to fucking win this thing. When you look back, you go, well, of course not. And also, I don't know about Hogan's recollection when he always talks about how things went down and how he didn't know leading in and Andre just said don't worry about it or something, and like he didn't have anything ready to go, which I don't fucking, he said he wrote down the whole match but he never got any word like if they were gonna do that. It didn't make sense to me, like that he goes, oh, Andre just calls a slam in the ring, like that wasn't planned. And it wasn't planned that he would try it in the beginning and barely get out so it looked like a three count. That shit's got to be fucking planned to go. Come on. But this is like the biggest Mania match of all time, they kind of say, you know, still, even though the match was fucking horrible if you're watching a fucking match. It was more so the spectacle for this. So that's my number one. My honorable mentions that I had in here, I actually had... Owens and Jericho, that whole list thing, I thought that was one of the greatest fucking reveals ever, where he gave him a list and then he lifts it up and sees his name, you know, he's like, why is my name on it? And it's Owens' list. It's fucking, I think that was fucking brilliant. And Taker and Diesel with the fucking bodies in the casket and all the mind games, and that Diesel gets pulled down into the fucking center of the ring on a lead into there where he's trying to get a fucking... when he's trying to win the title from Brett because he screwed Taker over and flips Taker off in a match too. So there was months leading up with that one. So that was one of my honorable mention lists too, as well as the Rock Cena deal. Like you said, all that lead in is fucking fantastic. And like you also say, we kind of got to see where things go, where they go once in a lifetime. And then it's the next year they have another fucking match. That's a problem. That's almost like I'm retiring. Oh, I'm having a match 2 months later. I can't retire like Foley did when he got into Mania after he retired at Royal Rumble.
Yeah, I think my I'm surprised you don't regret not having Austin Michaels on there after I recapped it through.
Yeah, but, after you said it made more sense to me for sure, because that was on my, like, I thought about that. And when things in my head, when I cannot remember specifically something from it, I remember the public workout. That's all I fucking remember in my head from it. And I don't remember, like, them doing shit to Austin or Austin even doing shit to Michaels on the lead-in. I don't remember a single thing they fucking did to each other, like, that was, like, leaving them laying dead other than that public workout.
Yeah, I think it was down to maybe what Michaels couldn't do. But, but ultimately, having Tyson join DX and whatnot did it was enough to obviously turn everything around. But, yeah, I think that's... just in general, just doing this show is a different take. I mean, you still end up with a lot of the same Mania memories because obviously you, you a lot of the big stuff is there. And that's why we say our style system better than Dave's, because it factors in the build. Mm-hmm. And you still end up with some of the best matches. I would say, you know, Hogan Sid is probably the only weak one that doesn't have major historical significance in long term. Mm-hmm. And I could easily swap that out with Undertaker Kane or Undertaker Punk. But, yeah, they're my only regrets. I don't have many regrets, or if any, from 1 to 5. I think my 1 to 5 is not affected by anything you said. So, yeah,
close out. That is it, kids. It is Mania time. Go enjoy your WrestleMania this weekend. Billy will be there. Front row, you'll see him banging on the fucking barrier in front of him. All in his glory. With a cowboy hat, look for him. Look for him. See if you guys can find him. He'll be in a green shirt. So just look for him there. That is it. We are going to go now. So make sure you check out. We have the show that we put up, giving the Mania preview on YouTube. Just look up the Dirty Sheets. And also on the Sports Gambling Podcast, you could find Billy's odds for gambling if you are able to gamble on all of this stuff. When it comes down to wrestling, Billy is at lockbetting.com. His Twitter is lockbettingx. And also, we are Dirty Sheets X on X. And I am at Lingus Mafia on X. Look for my stupid shows. They are the Wrestle Lingus Show or the Lingus Mafia Podcast. You can find all the stuff just linked through Twitter. So that's it for Mr. Billy Body. I'm Cav Manning. Enjoy WrestleMania.